Welcome back to the Space Case Sarah Show here on iRock Space Radio, and we are having a conversation with our guest, Astro Laura, who is an astrophysicist that studies the not-so-nice stars, we have learned. Which is, you know, I feel like it's sort of like your what would you call it in the Iron Man Marvel sort of thing. Like, she's like, you're like this really positive, sweet, nice person, and then you study like these evil stars. So it's like, that's her black suit Spider-Man alter ego. There we go. Alter ego.
We got that.
Do you have music that you like to listen to when you're analyzing this data? Is it like angry, epic star blowing up music?
I mean, now that you say that, I should. I'm much more into
radio
pop music.
Playlist?
I should add heavy metal or something. It's just exploding things.
You could totally make a video too. I've been seeing videos of people that are showing like they're like drag racers and they're like, what people think I'm listening to, and then they go in the car and they're really like, I got a pocket full of sunshine.
That would be a good choice, actually. That would be a good choice of song.
We have been learning a little bit about supernova, and learning about what that is, what you specifically look for. What is like a typical day in your life, though? Because again, I feel like everyone thinks that you're now probably sitting in a dark room, you know, staring at a computer for hours and over caffeinated, and then you go home during the day and crash and go back. But I'm certain that is not anything like what your day-to-day life is like.
No, I mean, you can see the sun coming in through my windows, so that's already kind of ruined that one. I think we have a lot more meetings than I think people would expect, and that's because we do collaborate a lot. And unless you're communicating with your teams, there's, you know, even less progress is made. So, of course, we honestly all love to just sit at our computers and just do science all the time. But that's not typically how it goes. So, you know, we have meetings, but it's mostly to talk about science. So, that's fine. We just talk the science
they make you
to people across
huh?
the world. Yeah, exactly. So inconvenient. Emails, of course, talking to students, but it's a lot of programming, really. It's a lot of, in my case, Python programming. And I didn't really think I'd like programming that much because it seems a bit scary and hard, but I like to think of it more as a tool of what I do. So I'm not really a software developer or anything like that. Just like a chemist wouldn't say they're a Bunsen burner operator. They're just not going to call themselves that, right? So just like they use that as a tool, I use programming as the tool to explore data. So usually what I'm doing is making plots and just sort of looking at numbers, because this kind of science that I do is this sort of discovery science. In looking at space, you can't generally set up an experiment and then be like, okay, star, it's your turn. You've got to explode now so I can test my hypothesis. You have to work with what you've got. So that's what I do. I work with what I've got and explore data, making plots and things just to see kind of what pops out. Sometimes I try and plan what I'm doing, but even when I do, it doesn't typically end up the way that I expect. That hypothesis situation goes out of the window very fast. But playing with data with Python is the typical day-to-day, plus all the meetings and emails and typical things like
yes.
that.
Yeah, all the emails. I'm just curious. So I apparently don't know a ton about supernovae. And
what did
so
you get on that quiz,
my...
actually?
Huh?
Yeah.
And
can you send me the quiz? Because I want to take it.
Okay. I will send it to you. I did actually pretty well, but that's because like the questions are, it's pretty easy to deduce what the right answer was. But in terms of history, so the last time, according to this, that we've ever seen with like the naked eye, a supernova was Kepler recorded a supernova in 1604. And from what I understand, that's the last time, like standing on Earth, that's the last time we were able to see one, which is a great segue for Benjamin's question about a certain star that keeps kind of teasing that it might do it
or
might not. So
it's at 110%. We lost me today.
Just only say the name twice and not three times.
Yeah.
All right.
We demand answers.
What's the deal with that? Beetlejuice, what's going on? You're talking about looking at stars and saying, hey, it's your turn. You should know, guys, it's turn. Let's go.
Yes. Yeah, when is it? I have to admit, I haven't kept up too much with this, but the prevailing idea seems to be it's not as close as everybody would like it to be to explode. I think it's sort of doing what it usually does is my understanding of what I've read and seen on tweets from scientists who are looking at that particular star, is that it's just, it typically kind of oscillates a little bit, goes brighter and fainter. And it's usual thing, but we are well overdue for a supernova in our galaxy. So one of my favorite objects that I studied for a while is called the Crab Nebula, which has a pulsar in it. So I was actually looking at the dead star in the middle, but that one was 1054 AD. So we typically don't know when supernovae went off. So we see all these bubbles so radio astronomy does the supernova remnants, so the leftover bubbles in space. And we find them and we're like, okay, it's about that big. But that doesn't tell us, because how big it gets depends on how much dust is around it. It's sort of like blowing a bubble underwater or blowing it in the air. You probably get a bit bigger in the air because there's not as much pushing against it. So we don't have good ways of telling how old stuff is unless someone wrote it down, like in 1604. And in 1054 AD, there were quite a few civilizations that wrote down, there's a new star in the sky, what's up with that? And that was the crab. So, you know, we're definitely overdue in what we expect. So if you do notice a new star in the sky, you should be able to see it during the day as well. If we have a supernova in our galaxy, then get ready for every astronomer to be losing their minds.
Which is why I think like people are so excited and kind of jumpy about the Betelgeuse situation, because it would be an incredible show. If it happened.
Man, every telescope, you could hear every telescope in the world just pointing, every single telescope as quickly as possible.
I heard that even like if it went off, it would be so bright during that initial beginnings that you could like see your shadow at nighttime still, like it would be super bright. Yeah, that would be really cool.
Yes, yeah, so we can really cool fingers.
Yeah, right. Come on. You're the star whisperer. Make it happen.
I'll try. I'll have a word. I'll send some radio signals up. It's easier said than done, but I'll work on it.
Right. Well, and that's the tragic thing about you're saying that we're overdue. Yeah, but on a cosmic time scale, yes. Like in our lifetime, are we gonna get to see one?
Yeah.
It's sort of the same thing, like they say, like, well, when we average out the statistics, generally a big rock kind of hits Earth every like 65 million years, give or take, like based on the averages of how often they think that orbital patterns and things get close enough, blah, 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 blah. And so then you do the math and you're like, yeah, that didn't work out so hot for the dinosaurs 67 million years ago. We're due for that. But, you know, the odds that it actually is going to happen in your lifetime is not really worth losing sleep over. At night?
No, that's in the same. We're just like, you know, it's that's a really short time scale. And then people are like, oh, how long? And it's, you sort of say, oh, a couple of million years.
Right.
So we get a little bit of a skewed perspective, especially with distance as well. We're like, oh, yeah, that's next door. Sort of.
Yeah.
Next door in space terms.
Right. Like the Andromeda galaxy is coming at us and everyone's like, oh, and then, yeah, first of all, it's going to take forever.
Yes,
nothing's probably going to hit each other soon.
Yep.
I mean, it'll be cool for if anything is alive still at that point. But I was learning a little bit of history, and that was one thing that I noticed. And the other question I noticed was that the first live recording of one was by accident, obviously, in 2008.
That sounds about right.
And they were just kind of like, whoa, what happened? Let me find it on this list.
Well, I should say that I can fill in while you look things up. That's okay. We typically are actually detecting supernova explosions all the time. There's something called the Transient Name Server, which anybody can have a look on, and that's where we record all of these things. But they're in other galaxies. So we see supernovae all the time, but they're, you know, far away. But, of course, to actually see one in real time, you have to be pointing at the right galaxy at the right time just by chance. So usually, you know, we look at a galaxy, I don't know how often these optical telescopes are looking at them, but let's just say once a week. So they'll look on Monday, and then the next Monday they'll be like, oh, in between this week, one went off. It's not typically when they're actually looking. So that's why it's so special to get one in real time, because usually it's just like, oh, we looked at it last year and we looked at it today and a supernova happened sometime in that time.
Right.
So that's why
space is huge, right? And so just looking at one, I mean, think of like Hubble or James Webb, like just even those are looking at like soda straw points. And there's galaxies and galaxies and galaxies. So yeah, the odds of being able to accidentally get one, is that like a bucket list item for you?
Well, personally? I think it's a bit different for radio telescopes, because usually the radio light comes last. So we usually see the explosion. So this is, it depends on the object, but typically, say a gamma ray burst or a supernova, you'll see that explosion happen in one of the higher frequencies. And then depending on the object, a few hours, a few days, maybe even weeks later, that's when the radio light starts shining through. So it's that's one of the things that I do, is I look for things in the radio so that we don't have to wait for someone else to tell us that it happened. So usually the things that explode and the things that change in the radio sky, it's because someone else told us. They're like, hey, we saw this thing in the x-rays, you might want to point at it. But what I try to do is find them first as well. So I have a few, as well as stars, I have a few different things that I work on. But yeah, we're trying to get the radio to really start winning the competition.
It's always a competition.
Supernovae in the radio. Yeah, it's a bit, we're usually the last to see them. Just
does the radio light come last because it's obscured by other frequencies of light ahead in front of it?
This is a good question. Covey might know it better, but I think it has to do with opacity. So it basically is blocked by the bubble of exploding stuff until it expands enough that it can get through. My understanding.
It's two things. It's that it has to transition from, you know, optically thick to optically thin so we can see the light, but also the actual like physical mechanism for what's causing radio light to be produced is the shockwave from the supernova hitting the material that's surrounding the star. And that produces emission that, you know, we can see at radio wavelengths. So yeah, both of those things mean that we as radio astronomers are kind of like just waiting. It's like, do the thing. We're watching.
We like to think of light as instantaneous, but like, of course, in these scales, it isn't. Things take time.
Like poking their computer screens. Obviously, in the dark, drinking their Monster energy drinks. And, you know, there's like the, you know. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up, but we have to talk, of course, very quickly about the most important thing, which is your dog, whose name is Astro. And Astro has his own webpage dedicated on your website. So
he does,
obviously. And an Instagram account, I noticed. So Astro, tell us a little bit about Astro.
Well, Astro isn't with me, unfortunately, because I keep moving places and he's got anxiety. He's on Prozac. He's special. he lives a very happy life now that he's on Prozac. Before that, he was a little ball of anxiety. So Astro is named after a combo of things. My parents used to take us to the Video Easy and we would get Astro Boy, the old cartoon. So he's named after that. He's also named after the dog in the Jetsons called Astro. And he has a brother from another mother called Tralfaz. Now, if you're into your niche references and you've watched the Jetsons, there's an episode, because if you remember the story, I'm sure everybody does, Elroy, who's the son in the Jetson, walks in with this giant dog. So Elroy is a tiny little kid and he's carrying this giant dog and he's like, Mom and Dad, can we keep him? I'm going to call him Astro. But that means Astro actually had some real parents. And the episode is called Millionaire Astro. And his real name, according to his millionaire parents, is Tralfaz. And he sort of goes Ralfraz because he doesn't really like it. So that's very niche, very, very niche reference there. But also Astro is called Astro because of astronomy. So it's a bit of a combo of naming. But yeah, he's a whippet and he's really skinny and really fast. And I think cute, depending if you like skinny dogs, if you like greyhounds, he's cute. Other people are like, have you fed him enough food? That's a skinny dog issue.
And like right now his time is shining again, reference there, in doggo like meme reference land. You know that me do it for you, like he's the perfect kind of dog.
Oh, the long dog
is
the public demands Astro in that.
Because he lives with my parents, so I'll be like, Mom, I need you to just make him do some things.
I feel like, though, we haven't done anything like this actually in quite some time, that we should have a tweet, comment, something, do something, and tell us the name of that really niche reference that she just said. Comment on one of our social media posts what the name of Astro's, was it his dad's?
His real name.
Astro's real name.
Yes, that's right.
Yes. Tweet out or comment on some posts what the real name was that she mentioned, and I will send you swag. I actually owe someone swag in Australia still, too, I think.
Oh, yes, my friend who was listening to the episode was like, yeah. Oh, that space sound, I couldn't hear it. Was it the sound of space? And we're like, we just forgot to put the sound.
That was when I forgot to put the sound actually in the finished product. But if you can remember to do that, unlike myself, who is a space case, and go comment, I will send you swag. So that's our little Easter egg, our little nugget of winning something from the station in there, whatever it is, a hat. And a shirt and stuff like that. That pretty much wraps this show up for us, guys. Do you have any last thoughts or comments, questions, concerns, complaints?
I'm just looking at Astro Dog's photos, and he is the cutest thing in the
world.
There's
one great one when he's wearing like a little Santa hat, and his tongue's flipping out the side of his head. He looks great. that's the dog I want to hang out with.
The Einstein one.
He might not want to hang out with you. That's the problem. Too much anxiety.
He's a little anxious.
Yes.
It's understandable. I empathize with that. So thank you so much for coming on and talking about supernovas and the work that you do. And this was great. Our iron episode is probably the nerdiest in like terms of a technical topic that we have tackled in terms of technical scientific topic. Information. We are...
I'm glad to bring the nerd to the episode.
Yes. This is very, very sciencey, and we love it for our iron episode. Thank you so much. Again, as always, if you are listening live, thank you for tuning in. If not, you can catch all our episodes, including season one, on all the platforms you could ever possibly ever think of. We are everywhere, so just... if you're listening there, then you already know. And thank you again to our guest. And we will talk to you all again and nerd out some more next week. You have been listening to the Space Case Sarah Show with the space nerds, Kavi and Benjamin, and special guest, Astro Laura. That's just rolling off my tongue.
You need to get that Instagram account now.
With special guest, Astro Laura, here on iRock Space Radio.